Is there a text mess tonight? WD2HW.
Oh, my fault. I'm sorry. I apologize. This is K2KEY. I had no idea of the time. Guess I was listening for Dick and doing my homework at the same time and sort of lost track of the time. Okay, this is K2KEY. Normally our moderator here on the TechNet is K2RIW, Dick, but I guess Dick possibly has something else came up and couldn't quite make it, or possibly maybe a little late. I haven't heard from him other than that. So, with this, I guess we can start the TechNet. My name is Mel Mike Echo Lima, and I'm K2KEY. So, anybody want to sign in? Howie, WB2HWW? Okay, you're in and out, Howie. I heard you in there. Maybe you're on a handy talkie. You're not in the best of location, but okay. Very good. Anybody else would like to sign into the TechNet?
Good evening, Mel. This is KC2MDP, Steve, and no questions at this time.
Okay, Steve, thank you for joining us, and I'm sure you'll have a comment in a little while. Things get a little hectic here at times, and we always find people say, aha, now I can make a comment. Anybody else? This is K2KEY.
This is M2NNU.
Yes.
Okay, we had a double that time, so let's see if we can take them one at a time. I believe there's something with a Q in there.
NNU?
It cut out. I got U, and that's it. I cannot get the football. Give it a little slower.
Okay, now we have a single guy. November 2, November uniform, Alex in Yonkers. I have a question about cellular phones, but it seems that if Dick is missing, there will be a tough, tough question because nobody will be able to answer. I think he's the only one working in this area. Back to you.
Okay, Alex, thank you for joining us, and yeah, maybe he'll be with us in a little while. Yeah, well, his specialty, certain specialties, I'm sure he could help you with. Anybody else would like to join us? This is K2KEY with the Limark TechNet.
KB2AZG.
K2L.
Okay, we had KB2, and then another station was, all right, KB2, it was an AB or AC or something, over.
KB2, AZG, Alpha, Zulu, Golf.
Okay, that's that time. KB2 Alpha Zulu Golf. And what is your name, please?
Name is Andy.
Okay, Andy, thank you for joining us. Do you have a question or a comment for the next?
Yes, I do.
Okay, put you down as yes. Okay, so that's two yes. Anybody else that says K2KEY?
KB1. NNH, name's Terry, no question.
WF2N, Cora, good evening, Mal. No questions at this time.
Terry, no question. Okay, and who else?
WF2N, Cora, good evening, Mal, and no questions.
And good evening to you, Paul. I'm talking to you now in a few weeks. Hope all is well. Thank you for joining us. Anybody else? Okay, the station was in and out there, so I couldn't get any copy on it. Who is the station that you want to try? See if you can move to a little better location, maybe I can get a better copy on you.
KC2UJL.
Okay, a KC2 and a U, maybe ZL, is that it correct?
Secretary, KC2UJL.
Oh, Tony, UJL. Okay, Tony, yeah, you're just about making it in here. I guess you're on a handy talkie. Any questions or comments for the net, Tony?
I think it's only at this time, just what to listen at this time to the frequency.
Okay, Tony, thank you for joining us. Anybody else?
KC2, QIQ, good evening, Mel, and no questions right now, but maybe later on.
And good evening to you, Glenn. Thank you for joining us. All right, anybody else?
M2MD, no questions tonight, Mel, but it's good to hear your voice.
Barry, where you been? You've been a missing person. Everything okay?
Yeah, as good as can be expected, you know. I'm doing all right. And it's, as I say, it's good to hear you, too. Where is the other guy?
He's around. He just arrived late. Sorry about that.
You see? Ask for the man, and there he is. Okay. Let's see. We got quite a number of check-ins here. Would you like me to read them off to you, or you, did you copy them over?
Please read off the yeses, Mel. Go ahead. Calls and names.
Okay, the yeses so far are N2NNU Alex and KB2AZG, Able Zulu Golf, Andy. Those are the two yeses so far. You want to take those two, Dick? Over.
Okay, let's start off with those. Alex, I know that you had a question earlier, and I think it's on something to do with cell phones, I'll bet you. N2AAU, NNU, K2RIW with K2KEY. You got it, Alex.
Okay, Dick, let me see if I have it. Yes, I was looking all over the place on the internet and whatnot to find out how the cellular phones work on the protocol on the air, and to my surprise I could find very little about it. Not sure if this is a proper medium, so please let me know if I should continue or not, over.
The TechNet considers appropriate any subject of interest to ham radio operators. That even includes whether or not they should marry a blonde or a brunette. So a cell phone, which is a communication device, certainly appropriate. Go right ahead with your question, Alex.
Okay. Well, I prefer brunettes. Thank you, Dick. The question is, can I intercept the ID only of the telephone that when it communicates to the tower? I just want to know when the telephone sends out its own ID. That's all I need to know. Nothing fancy, nothing stuff like it. I couldn't find any information about that. Back to you.
Okay. In other words, you would like to be able to, if I understand correctly, hear the transmission that the cell phone makes, which is a little bit difficult because the cell phone system is really kind of a repeater, very similar to this repeater. This repeater is on a high location. It's had a good amount of power. Because the antenna is up high, it can listen to signals that are quite far away, quite weak. So if I was positioned down at ground level with my automobile, say, 1 mile away from this repeater, quite a few of the signals the repeater hears well, I wouldn't hear from my automobile at all, the direct signal. So even if you had a way of interpreting the coded signal itself, which represents the identification number, there's a hell of a lot of signals the cell site is hearing that you would not hear. So even if you had the right equipment, you're not going to hear very many of the signals, is my first guess. But maybe I'm misinterpreting your question. In other words, I think you'd like to be able to identify when a particular person, when his radio signs into the cell phone service, and into the base station. Is that what you have in mind, Alex? N2NNU, K2RIW.
Yes, my mistake. My question was not precise enough, as all the engineers are doing. Sorry for that. Okay, the detector of that code is very close to the cell phone, say less than a meter. So there are no other interferences. The cell phone signal is very strong and the only one. All that I want to intercept is its own ID. So if I have two phones on my desk, I would like to make a decision which one is what. That's all.
Quebec, also. Quebec, Zulu, something like that. Go right ahead, sir.
Hey, WB2QZ, good evening. The short answer is it's not really easy to do. Depends on your carrier, and it depends on what mode of transmission, TDMA or CDMA, your phone's using. To see the sort of complicated way that your handset handshakes with the local tower, does its thing, how it communicates in CDMA, I can give a website that you can take a look at, and that'll give you some information how it works, and you'll understand why it's difficult to, if that works.
Let me ask you this question, Bill. Let's assume now that Alex is a pretty smart guy, and he's got something very simple. Say, for instance, he's got a neon bulb that'll light up when the transmitter 2 inches away transmits. So he's got a neon bulb, in my silly example, he's got a neon bulb alongside of cell phone number 1. 1 foot away, he's got cell phone number 2, and 1 inch away from it, he's got a neon bulb. Now, the one that is transmitting during that instant is lighting the neon bulb. Would that very simplistic idea that I just mentioned, in reality, you're not transmitting enough power to light up a neon bulb. But let's assume now that I've got a super good Fastenal brand of neon bulb that will light up on a milliwatt of power. And I've got a neon bulb near each of the cell phones, and they're separated by a foot apart on the desk. And now the one that's identifying itself is doing a transmission, therefore lighting the neon bulb. If I had that kind of a super sensitive neon bulb, might that work to tell me which one is transmitting? WB2QGZ, K2RIW.
Well, this is short. To some extent, yeah. There is, I know in the TDMA phones that I have here, you can buy a light-up antenna spigot or a battery with a some LEDs in the back, and it will light up when the phone rings, and it samples off air. There's no connection to the phone to determine if it's transmitting what's being called. So at least with the TDMA phone, with the amount of power that makes with reverse power control at minimum power level, it'll light up. That may work for a CDMA device. There may be a way to do that. Or in other words, there may be a sensitive enough detector that would work reliably. I guess that's not out of the question.
WB2HWW, what a comment.
Howie recognized. Now I'm going to go one step further with that one, but I'll pick up Howard first. Howard, go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm more, am I noisy or am I okay?
You're rather good. Go right ahead.
All right. If you're using a Nextel phone, the Nextel phones will make a lot of noise near like a radio or something, or an audio amplifier. Like I have my Nextel phone. If somebody calls me just before the phone rings, I'll hear the Nextel making noise in my speakers. Also, a GSM phone will do it. Some of the GSM phones will put out enough power that it will, you know, affect an audio amplifier. So if you take an audio amplifier or a very sensitive amplifier with a little dial connected to a speaker, that might work. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, you're on the same wavelength as me. The next thing I was going to ask Bill is now, I've got a small battery-operated amplifier, and the output of the amplifier is going to a diode, and the diode rectifies the signal. In other words, a weak signal being picked up by my tiny little circuit with an amplifier built into it is rectifying the signal. The signal being rectified flips a carrier-operated relay. The carrier-operated relay lights up a light bulb on that particular circuit. So I've got two circuits now, two amplifiers with two carrier-operated relays, and one near each cell phone. Now the cell phone that is operating, I could make this thing a sample and hold so that even though the transmission is so brief that I wouldn't be able to see the light bulb,
The light bulb stays lit for 2 seconds every time it sees a transmission. You see where I'm going with that one, Bill, and do you believe, regardless of whether it's a CDMA, TDMA, whatever, if the particular cell phone that's within a couple of inches of this little circuit that I'm just describing, an active circuit, sees a radio transmission, its sample and hold circuit will light the light bulb for the next couple of seconds. Would that work? Could that be made as a commercial product? And Alex is smart enough to be able to design such a circuit. So first, Bill, let's see if you think that that could work. WB2QGZ, K2LIW in the net.
Yep, again, it does exist right now, and I know it'll work on CDMA phones. And presumably it should be able to work on a CDMA phone. My only, obviously there'd be a little bit of a difference of sensitivity or the gain required, perhaps. If you were, CDMA signal being a meg and a quarter wide versus some of the other TDMA modes, particularly IDEN, fits in a 25 KP channel. And it has a little bit more range in reverse power control or handset transmit power. But I'm sure you can detect it. So yes, you can, shouldn't be a big deal to say, this phone's ringing or that phone's ringing or even this one's about to ring or that one's about to ring as it does its where are you in handshaking with the local tower. As far as trying to determine any kind of over-the-air phone number information, though, and demodulate that and read it, that's the part that is not going to be incredibly easy on either the IDEN or CDMA networks. So go ahead.
Well, may I intervene?
WW with a quick comment.
Yeah, Alex first. Let's make sure we're on the right wavelength here, because what I'm about to do, Alex, is now go one step further. The strength of the signal was about to adjust the amplitude of the brilliance of the light bulb. So now I don't even have to set threshold. I've got a log amplifier there. Now, as long as I've got these two little circuits, and each circuit is close to a particular cell phone, the brighter light bulb will tell me which one is transmitting at that time. N2, and then you, K2LIW. You got it, Alex.
Okay, I'm not interested in sensitivity or other things. I have to be able to distinguish between the two phones on my desk, or two phones or 10 phones. So if only one of them rings, or not rings, I need to know when one of them transmits. I know that they are transmitting while they are off, well, not at all, when they are not using it, so they send to the tower their ID code. I need to intercept this code, and based on this code, to make a decision which one it's transmitting. Forget about all those lights and whatnot, I need to intercept the code. I guess my question is the code coming up in clear? Is it ciphered? Is it something that I can intercept? That's my question.
Yeah, I think Bill's got... See, Bill works in the cell phone industry. And depending on whether it's IDEN, CDMA, TDMA, whatever, determining that code and then lighting up a display saying that the cell phone number 45671 is the one that just transmitted its ID code saying, here I am. And so intercepting that code, determining, deciphering that code, and therefore giving you some kind of an indication that it's cell phone number 3 and not cell phone number 5 that's on your desk. That's the part that I think Bill was telling us is difficult. If you had to design that kind of a circuit, do you believe you, Bill, could do that? WB2QGZ, KQLIW in the group.
It's encrypted. You can't do it.
Let's see what Bill's got to say. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, the short answer is it's very, very difficult. The reason you can't in IDEN, in addition to the fact that it's not exactly something that you can just decode straight out and get a good number out of, there is some encryption in there. There also is no direct transmitting of your, in other words, pretty much with both networks, what happens is when you power the phone up for the first time or do a master reset, it does a little bit of communication back with the local cell all the way through the switch and the register that holds all of that, all of your subscriber information and what you're allowed to use, what services you get, stuff like that. When that happens, it assigns kind of a temporary ID to you, is a simple way to put it. and you then never again use your actual hardware ID until, well, very infrequently. In other words, until you power cycle the phone, until you do a master reset again, or until you travel significantly away or try to register with another system. So you have that whole encryption routine, the whole fact that that information is secured, not necessarily always transmitted, and you need to be able to look for it at the right time. So you need to sync your receiving device or whatever you're going to use to try to grab this information off air with the system that you're on, so it would have to have some sort of GPS time reference as well, or some kind of very, very tight timing to know when to look and how to demod and everything. And I'll give you guys a website. I believe it's as simple as howcdmaworks, one word, .com. And if that doesn't work, if you Google search a guy's name, it's Scott, S-C-O-T-T, Baxter, B-A-X-T-E-R. You'll get his website. And that will give you the whole rundown on CDMA if you poke around there. And it will explain in painful detail why it's difficult to do in that mode. That may help you figure why it's difficult.
Lots of good information there, Bill. And now let me ask you a subsequent question. If I'm the kind of a person who turns off the cell phone every night and I turn it back on the next morning, when the cell phone wakes up and says, does a transmission to the local cell site and says, here I am, I'm awake, I'm alive, and give me a code number, give me the code of the day. So in other words, each day that I turn the cell phone on, I think for that day's operation, I have a particular ID number, sort of a rolling number. The cell site assigns one to me, and I'm going to use that one from now on, so that even if I can interpret that number, for Alex to know that of the five cell phones on his desk, that cell phone number five has this particular code, I can see some great difficulty in that. And if I'm even close to right on that one, I think we're back to detecting which one is transmitting by which one is putting out the strongest signal, because I've got a local field strength indicator, an active little circuit lighting up a light bulb. The brilliance of the light bulb tells me that, hey, this is the strength of the signal. So I've got one of these little detecting circuits alongside of each cell phone, and the cell phone that's now transmitting is the one that will have the brightest light bulb. Very simple circuit. Do you believe I can make that work? And what I just talked about there, the code of the day, is that part of the difficulty? WB2QGZ, K2LIW.
Yes, some of that is, in other words, the switch or the system parameters will decide how often you'll need to get a new, system identification number assigned to you. It's possible that the system may say, well, if you don't register anywhere else or come back in less than 30 hours, we're going to give you that same number. So that's a system parameter, not necessarily a hard thing decided by the phone. The thing with the if you want to go back to the detector thing again, I'm sure you can do that, because some of these light up batteries and light up antennas, I've seen three or four of them in a pile on a desk, and only the one that actually is ringing is illuminated. And these phones are within 3 or 4 inches of each other. So, it seems like whoever came up with these things came up with a method to stop one from going off with another one pretty close to it.
Okay, you said the magic words. You've seen light-up indicators. It sounds like what you just said is the commercial product to do what I've been talking about already exists, and maybe that's close to what Alex is looking for. What brand name, how many dollars, how available, this light-up indicator you just talked about. Run that by again, Bill, and slowly. WB2QGZ, K2RIW.
Okay, it's, I guess something that keeps me sort of employed is I'll spend a lot of time, not as much as I used to, but if you go around to a lot of these kiosks and malls and not necessarily company cell phone stores, meaning not a Verizon store or a Sprint store, but a you know, a reseller that sells a bunch of different brands. They'll have these light-up antenna displays and light-up battery displays. So you'll usually find them in malls and stuff. And one of the ways that the light-up antenna displays work, so you could light up all the antennas in the display, is they contain the little very broadband, poorly frequency-controlled 800 megahertz transmitter, which created the noise from, you know, 750 to 950, give or take, and that would actually hammer some of my cell sites, and we'd have to go out and find them and get them turned off. But it's a lot of malls will have them, and a lot of these, you know, cell phone resellers. Okay.
Okay, I'm having some misunderstanding here now. Is the light up antenna indicator or battery indicator, not quite sure what the difference is between those, are they intended to disable the use of a cell phone? I mean, there are certain restaurants that would love to have a circuit such that cell phones in that restaurant are not operative. Therefore, the patrons there are not going to be plagued by the darn ringing sound and the person shouting over a cell phone in the back of the restaurant and saying things that are inappropriate, and the rest of the patrons are unhappy. So are we talking about a device that tries to disable a cell phone? In other words, it does transmissions when cell phones are doing an ID? Or what is the real purpose of this light-up battery indicator or light-up antenna indicator? I'm not quite sure what the differentiation of those are. So some more words here, Bill. WB2QGZ, K2RIW, the group.
It's illegal to jam cell phones.
Oh, that I know. But let's see what Bill has to say here.
Okay, amusingly enough, you're right. If somebody's making a jammer and it's going back and forth whether he can use it or not, and to be implemented in prisons, and the manufacturer insists it's legal, and that's been cooking for the last 2 weeks. As far as I'm concerned, it sure is illegal. Okay, the device itself is either a replacement battery. You take the battery out of your phone, and you put this battery in with a clear plastic rear cover that comes with it, and when your phone rings, the battery lights up. It has a bunch of LEDs built into the back of it. Or you take your stock antenna, if your phone still has a whippy-dippy antenna, a lot of them don't at this point. You unscrew it, and you screw this other thing back in, and it has some LEDs built into it. And when your phone rings, it would light up. Now, the retailers of these devices, in order to know, how do you display what it looks like to somebody? So this is a totally separate thing. This is in the display at the retailer. Built into that display, he will have a little broadband noisy generator that will make all of those things go off so that you can walk up to a little display case and it has 10 different antennas and 15 different batteries all doing their little LEDs lighting up. And that's the device that causes interference. And its purpose is just to try to make those lights come on. Inadvertently, it will typically hammer any 800 megahertz trunk system or 800 megahertz cellular or IDEN user or cell site, actually, in the vicinity. Is that better?
No, it's not business for me. Yeah, I think Alex is looking for a device that tells him the cell phone has just made a transmission to the cell site but has not yet rung the phone. He's not trying to find out which phone is ringing. He wants to know which phone is transmitting. So would a variation of the light-up antenna or light-up battery be able to say, this cell phone has just made a transmission, but it's not ringing yet. It hasn't yet accepted a call. It's just doing a transmission for ID. Do you believe a variation of this light-up battery or light-up antenna could do that? That's what I think Alex might be looking for. Bill first, I want to know if that's possible, even if that's not what Alex is looking for. So WB2QGZ, K2RIW, could we modify and get that function?
This is exactly what they're looking for.
Only books would I get, technology.
Bill, go ahead.
Okay. It's driven by the phone transmitting or the presence of RF, so it would know. It would light up based on the presence of RF. So if the phone was establishing communication with the cell originally, it would do it for a very brief time. If it was updating its location, it would potentially do it for a very brief time. And when it rang, it should do it for a while, sure. It should light up at that point. Now, the thing is, I don't know, in other words, I don't recall if I've ever seen one of these cooking for a CDMA phone. And that's where I was going before. In CDMA land, your transmit signal can be incredibly low in power and spread over a meg and a quarter. And I don't know if there is an existing device available off the shelf that you can buy in the store cheaply that will be able to see that signal and do a similar thing for a CDMA phone.
WB2.
Okay.
Answer.
You're very close here now, Bill. Let's assume now that the IDEND, which has a longer pulse duration of its identification, the IDEND type phone will light up a illuminated battery or illuminated antenna. And now because the CDMA makes transmissions that are so brief, you wouldn't see the lighting. If I added a sample and hold circuit, in other words, I've got a monostable multivibrator there. So each time a microsecond of transmission of an individual pulse of CDMA occurs, the microsecond of duration is converted into half a second of duration of the light bulb. If I modify that circuit, could I then identify that the CDMA phone has made a transmission? And if the answer is even close to yes, that I know that Alex is smart enough to be able to do that modification, how expensive is that circuit? If I buy the light-up battery or the light-up antenna, how expensive is it? But once we find the design of one of those and Alex makes a modification of it with the pulse duration, the sample and hold, as I call it, or the monostable, so that it lights up for a long enough period of time, do you think that's an expensive circuit? I'm hoping the answer is it's not so expensive. Do you think we smart guys could do that? That sounds like a handy thing to have. WB2QGZ, K2RIW.
We will not make a differential between the 10 phones. We will not know which phone rang because they're all very close, less than a foot between them.
Yeah, but that particular battery is connected to a particular phone, or that particular antenna is connected to a particular phone. Bill, do you think we can do that?
Okay, well, again, with IDEN phones, I've seen it. In other words, I've seen one phone illuminate, and another phone, we'll say 6 inches away, not illuminate when it rang. So apparently it requires very, very, very close proximity to go off. And it knows it will be very close proximity because in the case of the replacement screw-in antenna, it's part of the radiating structure, and with the battery, it's less than a 32nd of an inch away. But the IDEN TDMA signal is a relatively narrow 25 kilohertz, 18.3 occupied bandwidth per the mask signal that is at low power or lowest power out of the phone. If I had to take a stab at it, I'd say somewhere between 10 and 25 milliwatts. 10 and 20. Let me think about that. Probably 10 to 25 milliwatts. If you were right on top of the cell. The CDMA signal can potentially be lower in power than that, and not confined to 25 kilohertz, but spread out, that same amount of power, actually a little bit less power, spread out over a meg and a quarter. So I'm saying it's probably a little bit more difficult to detect the CDMA RF and make the thing illuminate using a CDMA phone.
Okay, we had a triple on that one. Let me ask you this question, Bill. Alex has the inverse square law strongly in his favor. If he designs a tiny little circuit, battery operated, it's got a hollow section to it, and he slips it over the antenna. Back in the old days, when you had a perturbance coming out of the side of the cell phone that was the antenna. He slips the thing over the antenna of cell phone number one. And he's got another one he slips over antenna of cell phone number two. And the two cell phones are separated by a foot on the table. No matter how far down in milliwatts that transmitter goes to, because one of those circuits is a 16th of an inch away from cell phone number one only. That's the one that's going to light. How expensive is that light-up antenna circuit? And do you believe a modification of that could be done, as I'm just describing, without investing a whole lot of dollars? WB2QGZ, K2RIW in the group.
K2
Okay, KC. Bill first, and then we're going to go to Eric. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, I think so. I mean, the battery, I mean, to buy an OEM battery is, depending on what you get it, you know, $20, $30, $40. The light-up battery is probably no more than $10 more than the cost of the regular battery. But there is a significant difference if you want to call it in power density, because you have a relatively low power spread over 1.23, 1.25 megahertz in the case of CDMA, versus a higher power confined to 25 kilohertz basically. So there's tremendous magnitude and difference of power between the TDMA device and the CDMA device, but the cost of that actual light-up circuit probably does not exceed more than $10 over the cost of the battery, which, you know, it comes built into, okay?
Let me clarify something.
HWW, with a quick comment, please.
Okay, Alex is the guy with the original question. I'm going to go to Alex. Then when it comes to these kinds of crazy circuits, Eric is the guy who's been working with them day to day. So I'm going to jump over everybody here and be a little bit unfair. We're going to go to Alex first, and then Eric in that order. Alex, let's make sure that we're on your right wavelength first. But even if you're not, you've created some curiosity on my part. I'm suddenly interested in this circuit, and I'm going to be quite curious as to what Eric thinks about it. Alex first, go ahead. AAU, you got it. NNU, you got it.
Okay. I haven't spelled out all the parameters of this exercise. The detector has to be separated from the cellular phone. It has to have a range of 0 to about 6 foot. So between this range, it should operate. It should be identifying the transmitting cell phone. So that complicates a little bit the exercise. It cannot be part of the telephone. It has to be separated. The range of operation of the detection should be between 0 and 6 foot. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, you've just added a huge degree of difficulty with that one, Alex. I can see why you want it, but now we're back into finding the right code that's associated with that particular phone, demodulating it, and somehow indicating in a manner that tells you that the left-hand cell phone and the right-hand cell phone are the two sitting on your desk. I can see a huge degree of difficulty there. Eric, you've designed some pretty elaborate circuits. If you had this challenge, what would you do? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the group.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, I just wanted to give you the benefit of my taking one of those light things apart a couple of years ago, an 800 megahertz zone. And you got to remember, most of these cell phones have a command channel, which is constantly polling the cell site. The activity that goes on is, you know, it changes according to the mode that it's in. As far as CDMA, I'm not sure how that's organized, so I haven't been interested in cell phones for a few years, but just taking one of those things apart is basically, I suspect it's just a Schottky diode, a capacitor, and that's what runs the LEDs. It's a very low voltage. I think they're like a half a volt where they start to light up. And it's simple. I mean, you guys are talking sophistication. They don't make cheap things like that that are very sophisticated. But anyway, that's my experience of one of those little caps that you put on top of the antenna. I've never seen the batteries that light up. But when the phone rings, usually the power on the command channel goes way up to make sure that the cell site hears it, and that's why it lights up initially, and then once you've made the connection, then you're in the two-way mode. It readjusts its power, of course, according to the link budget that it's getting, and I'm talking digital phones, not analog phones. Although the analog phones do something similar, but anyway, that's just my experience of it. And, I'd have to investigate a little more how the CDMA works as opposed to the CDMA. The older systems were very much, you know, five command channels. If you wanted to jam any of the phones, all you have to do is just wipe out the five or six command channels and the phone goes away. K2RIW, K2J.
K-A-2-Q-I-J.
Okay, I heard of QIJ. Let me go to Bill first, QGZ. Then we're going to go to Howard, and then QIJ in that order. Bill, the 1 to 6 feet of distance between the cell phone and therefore identifying which one. We're back to finding the code of the day, as I call it, and I think that's a great degree of difficulty, but maybe you know of a way around that. Can we meet you QGZ? You got a bill. K2RIW in the group.
Hey, how about different ringtones?
There's a cool answer. That works. I have a pile of fancy test equipment that I use to maintain both a TDMA and a CDMA network. And I cannot divine any of that stuff off air. The way the information is diced up in the cell site, in other words, I have no access in the cell site pretty much to try to get any of that information out over the path back into the switch. So pretty much no. Not without an incredible amount of thought and expense and circuitry. And that's why depending on what the network you're on, if it's a CDMA network, you go over to that website, that will tell you much more than you want to know about every single step of the call setup process, the phone powering up process, how it wrangles your information back and forth to the switch, and you can see the degree of detail, the degree of difficulty in trying to do what we're talking about doing.
Okay, I see a way around this, Bill. To really, with all your sophisticated test equipment, for you to find out the exact code that cell phone is transmitting, demodulated and indicated somehow on a display device, rather difficult. However, to heck with what the specific is. Let's assume now that I've got some kind of a simple circuit that's got a memory to it, and so I hold the circuit near my cell phone, I walk away from all the other cell phones so that my circuit is only picking up the transmission from that cell phone, and it memorizes the timing of its transmission, which somewhere buried in there is its code. And then from then on, it puts that into memory, and every transmission it sees, it compares the two and says, aha, that one's got the exact same timing. So now when I walk back to the table, that circuit that looks for that particular signature only lights up when it sees that signature. Therefore, it's telling Alex that cell phone number one, the one that I went through the memory scheme with, is the one that's now transmitting. Do you think that is possible, Bill? W2QGZ, K2LIW in the group.
No way.
I'm going to say, if you wanted to get really fancy, could you demod a TDMA Iden signal that you know and say if it's this, then light up? I'm not going to say it's impossible. It is virtually impossible to divine any intelligent information if you were to try to monitor off air. If you were to do something like that, it's possible. You're talking about a very, very short burst. I want to say something like 7.5 milliseconds. In which that information is going to come out. But it's an interesting way of looking at it. CDMA-wise, I'm saying no. I'm saying there's too much timing, there's too much other stuff going on that you're not going to see. In other words, again, with CDMA, it's going to be encoding this thing over a meg and a quarter in a method that's going to be very difficult for you to decode. Even without a piece of base station equipment. In other words, you might be able to divine something from the network using the rake fingers in the CDMA handset. You might be able to get some kind of demodulated thing, which then you may not be able to do anything with. You'd still have a lot of fancy work to do. But you don't even have the option of that, of having a handset that you could go in and sample from, because the handset's going to be looking at the base station frequencies. So I really don't see it happening in CDMA.
KC2, QIQ.
And I'm reading about it. I got some answers for you.
Okay. We're looking for a discriminant here, Bill, and QIQ recognized, and EJ recognized. We're looking for a discriminant, and I was hoping there's a simple timing discriminant that would allow me to identify cell phone number one versus cell phone number two when I've been through the memory scheme. All right, how has it been trying to tell us, is a lack of a solution or a solution, the degree of difficulty? HWW, go right ahead, Howard.
Okay, am I noisy or full quiet?
You sound good. Please proceed.
All right. One thing, those light devices work on 800 meg. Most of your phones are on 1800 and 2000. It gets a lot more complicated. Also, remember, they're using 128-bit encryption. And especially the T-Mobile phones, you change their every time you make a phone call. So there's a lot of encryption going on. You would have to be the CIA to have hundreds of thousands of test equipment. That stuff is very well encrypted. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, that 128-bit encryption is going to be the difficulty. Mr. QIJ, I know you had something to say. Start off with your name, sir, and your comment.
KAC2RIWKA2PYJ. The name is John, and we're in Middletown, New Jersey, Dick. First, let me see what I'm making the repeater.
You sound beautiful, John. Please proceed.
Okay, very good. Alex didn't tell us everything about his application, but I'm going to try to take this a different way. If he has control over the cell phones that are on the desk in front of him, and if they have a Bluetooth interface, the Bluetooth interface may very well communicate signaling information to a remote device like an auto speakerphone, and perhaps from that he can identify which Bluetooth channel he's receiving on when that phone rings.
K2KEY. KEY recognized. Hey, Bill, by way of the Bluetooth, can I find a discriminant that I can identify to a particular cell phone? QGZ first, go ahead.
Okay, not too familiar with the Bluetooth over the ear interface, so I guess that's possible, but I'm not too knowledgeable in that.
That's a very good idea.
I think we're getting
two phones in the area. The phones do send out an ID. The design, so you definitely can do that, Dick.
Okay, Glenn, and then Mel in that order. Case KB2, Mr. QIQ, Glenn, go right ahead with your comment.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Just a quick thing. You know, one time I pulled one of these SIM cards out of these latest phones, and I was able to copy it and basically, you know, view everything that was on that card and what it was doing. It works very, very similar to most of the other networks out there where it requires a handshake with the hub. So to actually intercept the phone and get much of any data in between the phone and where it's transmitting to and where it's handshaking is about as useful as trying to attach to another computer without getting hooking up to a network and intercepting in between. Not a very, very easy task to do, especially over RF and intercepting to view. I would say that the amount of detail that you would need in order to lock onto that network and find the idea is ID. Unless you actually had or were able to identify from each SIM card what was on each individual phone, I don't think that that's very likely. As far as the Bluetooth is concerned, each Bluetooth, as long as you have access to each one of the individual phones, the Bluetooth will identify each device that you connect it to. Now, is there a single device that can detect multiple phones of Bluetooth? That I don't know. I don't know if that's available or not, but I do know that every device that you connect, the headset or connecting through the radio inside your car, you can connect it, but you have to make the connection on the phone itself, not on the peripheral device. KC2QIQ, back to you, Dick.
K2KEY.
Yeah, Mel's next. I'm going to be asking Bill in a minute. If two human beings, both running Bluetooth, wireless connection between their ear and the cell phone that's on their waist, if two Bluetooth-using people are in the same automobile, would that system keep everything separate? And if so, we're halfway home here. Mel, K2KEY, go ahead, Mel.
Okay, simply put, if I was to put in series with the battery a milliamp meter on my cell phone, when that phone is being paged, what would I see the difference in the current rate average, Dick? Do you have any idea? Over.
Give that man a cigar. Hey, Bill, is that a possible solution? No matter which cell phone is transmitting, it's got to be drawing some extra current. Can we get a discriminant out of that one? I know now we've got to make direct connection to the cell phone, and that violates what Alex really wants to do. Alex wants this thing 6 feet away and point to the right one, which is a darn difficult thing to do. But just by measuring the current, and now, hold on, I can wirelessly detect the fact that that particular battery is drawing more current because he's creating more magnetic field. We're getting closer to a solution here. KB2QGZ, do you think we went down the blind alley with that one? K2RW, you got it, Bill?
Yep, no, you could probably, I mean, you could probably do it by battery drain. There should be some increase when the phone transmits. That makes sense. And with regard to the Bluetooth thing, I just know from the user end, I can have two or three simultaneous Bluetooth devices working separately, or two separate paired to separate devices. In other words, three devices paired with three other devices operating simultaneously in my vehicle, and there's no interaction.
Okay, let's go back to Alex now. We haven't got a solution, Alex. We know a little bit more about how difficult your problem is, and I see a couple of possible avenues you can go down. N2NNU, the guy who asked a fascinating question, KQRIW. You got it, Alex.
Yeah, okay, guy. Thank you for all the input. Didn't expect to be such interesting discussion. Well, Bluetooth, it's not feasible for two reasons. I cannot have control over the telephone on my desk. I cannot force the telephone to have a Bluetooth. Second of all, the detector, a Bluetooth detector consumes too much power. It will die in about an hour or so. So that's out of the question. Second of all, measuring the current of the battery, having the electronics there to transmit that to the external device, it's superfluous because I can simply attach a proximity switch to it and I got it. It's no issue here. The real problem is no modification allowed to the telephone as it is. So the simplest way is to get that code somehow. Let's assume that I have the tools, the know-how, and everything that's needed to detect that code. The question that becomes, is that code public domain? Is it something that the factory is hiding? Is that something that you have to pay for? I think it's more a political issue than a technical issue.
I think Bill can possibly answer that one. WB2QGZ, you got the floor.
I think a lot of it is security for prevention of, I forget what the term was, when somebody duped your cell phone. In other words, in the back in the dim time, in analog days, when you can read somebody's information over the air with some relatively inexpensive information and then just program a phone to duplicate that. Cloning, I guess. There you go. So it's pretty well shrouded, I think. Not only because some of the over the air interface stuff is to some extent proprietary. With iDEN, it certainly is. And the encryption is there for prevention of cloning or whatever. However, if you were able to demodulate that signal, and you were able to look at what the phone sent, like you had suggested earlier, and that's quite a stretch. Just getting to that point, I think, is quite a stretch. If you knew what phone B sent and phone A sent and phone C sent as a in response to a call, yeah, maybe you could do something like that. But I still think that that's an incredible amount of work to demod that signal and get anything that you could look at and compare.
Sorry, mate. Okay, so what I just heard, and then we're going to go to Alex again, so it's the anti-cloning methods that have been added to the phone. It's a huge degree of difficulty of demodulating that particular identification of that particular phone. I see it coming here. You've got some kind of a rolling code of the day-like thing in order to have anti-cloning capability. That's going to make Alex's job a lot more difficult. And to NNU, you got it, Alex.
Okay, to Jeff.
Alex first, and then Eric in that order. Alex?
Yeah, I understand that. The codes coming out on this particular transmission are never the same because of the cipher key changing on every transmission. I understand that. The idea is not to clone the SIM or whatever. The information requested is just too little to be able to clone. All that they want to do is to identify the telephone. For example, if you go through a door, I want to know who went through the door just because you went with your phone through it. It's a sort of RFID, if you will. It will open my door at the home automatically. There are out there OEM modules, all kind of modules, CDMA, CDM, all kind of whatever. I wonder if I can put one of those in promiscuous mode and just monitor what's coming up on those 10 telephones on my desk. What do you think about that?
And you've just given a beautiful name to the product here. RFID for cell phone. Cell phone RFID. Boy, it sounds like a fun product here. Eric, KE2EJ, how would you solve that problem? You got it, Eric.
K2IW, KE2EJ. From what I'm reading, just something I've been familiar with is apps. This is, broken up into 65 slots. It's over 12 megahertz. Now, the CDMA is really sort of like what we're working with in digital television. It's not perfect in terms of orthogonality, but it is an ODFM kind of signal. But it's also spread spectrum. Now, any of the different phone systems, basically what you're doing is it's sort of like, you know, you're transmitting wireless Ethernet in your hand, if you really want to think about it. Most phones you can actually hook your laptop up to, and you find this IP. If you look on your phone, you'll find out there's an IP address associated with it, and carrying the data it pretty much follows the Ethernet protocol in terms of its outside structure. The CDMA technology was developed by Qualcomm, so you know they're the big player here. And so in the case of the CDMA, I don't see a way where you could make an identification without actually decoding the data. Because, you know, I'm not sure how the phone works, you know, its handshaking and what it does with power level. Let me just drop. But, there are devices now that the other gentleman mentioned it. I'm looking online. There are devices that will take CDMA and TDMA and bring it down to the receivers. And I suspect that each phone has its own IP address. And assuming you're talking about it all being on the same system, that if you could actually get down to the data level, because the encryption is in the codec, so the encryption is all about not being able to hear the audio. You can't encrypt the protocol because you still need to know where the sync word is, where the address header is, etc., so on and so forth. So that stuff's got to be the same. So really, the phone is sort of like a transport stream. And what you do with the protocols inside that transport stream. So if you can get devices that can listen to CDMA at the particular range of frequencies that we're talking about, and knowing the same pseudo-random order as a phone, you probably could come up with a way of displaying on a computer screen which one's ringing.
KC2, QIQ.
You got it, Brent.
Yeah, Eric is right on the money with this one. How it can be done, I don't know if this is legal or not, so take this one with a grain of salt, because it might not be legal. If you have access to the cell phone, and you copy the SIM card, and you have a laptop, and you got a SIM card reader that will read the SIM card inside your phone, you can copy that data down onto your laptop. Now, if your laptop is now connected to a network, you know, forget a network, just use a router. Now, if you have a router, and the router, you want to hot rod a little bit. You go inside of it and you change the frequency. And you change the frequency now of the of your wireless router. So you're going in through the wired end, through the Cat5 end, and you change the frequency of the router to the same frequency as cell phones now. Now what you do is you have the SIM card information, so you can read the digital information, run an algorithm program that will read it to the router, and then now the router is receiving on these cell phone frequencies. Doesn't sound very expensive, but I imagine with a little bit of work, you could probably get that going in a couple of hours.
WD2IQ.
Okay, that was a quadruple. I don't know who all was in there on that one. Bill, let's go to Bill first. QGZ, do you see a possible solution in that direction?
Not the same modulation scheme.
You have the SIM card, so once you have the SIM card, you have the protocol, Howie. KC2QIQ.
Yeah, he's talking about the RF portion of it. There's four different systems.
Okay, Eric, is there a possible solution there, do you think?
Well, if you know that you're dealing with a CDMA phone and it's, say, it's T-Mobile, you know where they live and what their on-codes are, yeah.